Okay, what we talked about on the last year was some of the important aspects of why it is that we have to keep the laws of kashrus. What I want to talk about today is something that I think many of us do not know exactly how it came to be, but is something that is such a staple of all of our lives, and it just makes sense for us to try to understand it. And that is, where did the whole kashrus apparatus come from? Why do we need to have kashrus agencies? What is the source of this? What is the evolution of this process? And how is it that we have restaurants today that are relying on hashgachas when, after all, we should be relying on the store owner himself? So let's begin with the beginning of the story, and we'll go through the whole evolution of how this happened. This has nothing to do with politics. Some people think kashrus is political. Maybe some places it is. No kashrus that I'm involved with is political, and I think it's just important to understand what this is all about. That includes in the five towns. The five towns issue has nothing to do with politics. It may be why somebody from the five towns would be smirking. I'm just saying, it could be. But our issue in our community has nothing to do with politics. So let's begin. We begin with the beginning of the story. Does everybody have what I sent out? Everybody has what I sent? Okay. So what we're going to do is skip down until number hey. We're not going to do the beginning. If we have extra time, I'm going to go back because I think that's a very interesting point to consider. But let's get to the topic first. We begin with the Gemara Maseches Chulin. The same Gemara can also be found in Maseches Gittin, Daf Beis, where the Gemara tells us a rule. Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurin. What does that mean? Even though very often in Halacha we require two witnesses in order to verify a claim, in order to verify a story, here when it comes to Isurin, which means kosher food or something of that nature, you only need one witness. One aid would be sufficient. So if I walk into a room and I see something on the table and I don't know whether or not it's kosher, I can ask anybody and I can believe that person who tells me that it is kosher. What exactly does it mean that one person would be trusted? It doesn't have to be a kosher aid. Normally, let's say we have a Beis Din and we're trying to ascertain whether a story is true or not true. I can't bring my mother or my brother or my sister or my husband or wife to be the one to testify on my behalf. We know that we don't trust all of those people who are very closely related to the defendant or to either party involved. And therefore, when it comes to Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurin, I should have said the same thing. Maybe we should not be able to trust my brother, my sister, my mother, my aunt, my uncle, because after all, they're going to tell me it's kosher because they want me to eat it. They don't want me to be hungry. The answer is, we don't need a kosher aid. When we talk about Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurin, it means anybody who is Jewish is believed. That's a very broad statement, as we're going to see soon. We're going to narrow it down a little bit. But the general concept is, any Jew is assumed to have been believed because of the fact that they are Jewish and because they follow the laws of the Torah. Therefore, we should assume that if somebody tells you information about a specific food item, there is no reason for you to have any questions, any doubts about eating it. Now, why should this be the case? Rashi says it's logical. It makes sense that this should be the case because if not, Ein adam ocha b'shel chavero, says Rashi, I would never be able to eat in your house. If I wasn't able to trust another Jew, I could never go to your house to have something to eat, and that would be a problem. So therefore Rashi says, it's misvara. It's just a practical consideration that the Torah tells us, Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurin, one person would be trusted, because otherwise we wouldn't have a society, we wouldn't have a civilization if we were not able to trust each other on certain matters. Similarly, says Rashi, even if we weren't going to trust our neighbors, how would I ever be able to come into my house? Let's say a member of my family made dinner tonight. Let's say a member of my family prepared Shabbos. How would I ever be allowed to sit at the table when I don't know what happened? I wasn't in the kitchen. I wasn't watching. I don't know what they did. The answer is I'm allowed to trust one person because that person is Jewish and we have a right to assume that that person is doing the right thing. Tosfos says a little bit of a different spin on it. And Tosfos says he comes to the same conclusion, but he says, perhaps we learn this halacha from when the Torah discusses in great detail about Hilchos Nida. So you have a husband and wife who are living a life which is supposed to be a Torah lifestyle, and the assumption is that every month or whenever a woman has her menstrual cycle, she's going to go to the mikvah at the time that she is tahora. Now, how does the husband know that his wife is actually able to go to the mikvah? Maybe she's lying to him. Maybe she really did not go through the process the way she was supposed to, and if he is then going to have intimate relationships with his wife, he's going to be in violation of an Isser Kares. Says Tosas, the Torah says, V'safra lo, which means a woman is allowed to keep track for herself, is allowed to go to the mikveh for herself. Nobody has to check in with her to make sure she's telling the truth. We have a certain basic assumption that people are going to be truthful in their lives. And therefore, we have a right to assume that this husband can trust his wife and that this man can trust his family members, and All of us can trust each other, which is why a husband and wife are allowed to have a home where they have a certain level of trust with one another. And similarly, it's why we assume that I'm allowed to eat food that is coming out of somebody else's home, because we have a right to assume that that person is to be trusted when it comes to the laws of kashrus. Now, based on this Gemara, the Rambam writes as follows. Look here at number A. The Rambam is in Hilchos Shechita, Perek Yud Halacha Yud Dalet, says the Rambam. What he's talking about here is a shochet, is somebody who slaughters animals. He's talking about that example, but it really applies across the board. Says the Rambam, Kol Tavach Shehu Yodea HaTrefos HaElu. If you have a person who is a shochet, if you have somebody who slaughters animals, and he knows the basic rules of shechita. Now, it's intricate, it's complicated, it's not so simple, but the Rambam says, if you have somebody who is assumed to know what he's doing, harehu b'cheskas kashrus, you have a right to say, the default position of any individual is, he knows what he's doing. And if he's going to be slaughtering an animal and then selling it to me or giving it to me, I have every right to assume that this person knows what he's doing and I can rely upon his action. Mutar lo lishchot v'livdok ba'atzmo. He's allowed to shecht on his own, v'limchar, then he's allowed to sell the meat. V'ein bazeh chashash, and there is no problem at all. She'ed echad ne'eman bi'isurin. Because one person has a right to be trusted, has a right to be believed. Then the Rambam throws in, bein yesh lo hanaya be'eduso, bein ein lo hanaya be'eduso. The Rambam says, even if I have personal benefit from what it is that I'm saying, meaning, I invited guests to my house, it looks good for me to have 20 people in my house. Now, somebody stands up at the table and says, oh, 1 second, is the food kosher today? And I'm like, yeah, of course it's kosher. Now, it makes me look good if I say my food is kosher. I'm going to look pretty bad if I wouldn't be able to answer that question properly. Says the Rambam, it doesn't matter. Eidecha ne'eman bi'isurin means I have a right to be trusted, even if it's for my own benefit that I'm giving the answer. It would still be something that we would rely upon. Well, if we would stop here, you then can ask yourself, why would anyone ever require a hashgacha? If every Jew, the default position is that every Jew has a right to be trusted when it comes to the laws of kashrus, then why would you need somebody to oversee their activities? Why should we have any concerns? So where does this come from? Let's try to understand the evolution of this whole institution that we have today. And we begin with a Mishnah in Meseches Bechoros. If you look here at number Vav, this is a Mishnah on Daf Lamed in Meseches Bechoros, not to be confused with Meseches Brachos. They are not the same. People tell a story about my father. I don't know if it's true. I doubt that it's true. But they said that one time in the middle of Shir, he asked one of the boys to go get a Gemara Brachos, and the guy came back with a Bechoros, and my father didn't want to embarrass him, so he pretended that he was reading, and he said it verbatim. I don't think it's a true story, but that's what he said. Okay. Anyway, whether it's a true story or not doesn't matter. The fact is that it could be a true story. And they don't say these stories about us, because we wouldn't be able to have anyone believe it about us. So the Gemara says, Mishnah Meseches Bechoros writes as follows, HaChashud al hadavar lo danu velo me'ido. What does that mean? HaChashud means somebody who is either he is suspicious or we are suspicious of him. Meaning, if somebody is a chashud, meaning is not doesn't have a greatest reputation, then says the Gemara, that person cannot be trusted. So, we started off saying, which means default position is everybody's trusted. Yeah, everybody's trusted unless you lose your reason for us to trust you. Now, how do you lose that? We're going to see in a minute. Says the Mishnah Maseches Demai, why is it that we shouldn't trust somebody just because he doesn't eat kosher? Why should I assume he's going to give me something that's not kosher? Just because he's not careful doesn't mean he doesn't care about me. The Mishnah says, Al atzmo eino neman, keitzad yehei neman al shelach eirim. If we can't trust him for himself, then how could he be trusted to provide for other people? So if we have somebody who is not careful about kashrus, then they certainly are in the category of somebody who loses that default trust that we have in every Jew, because you don't keep kosher and therefore you cannot be trusted. Says the Shulchan Aruch, here in Yeridea Simin Kuf Yud Tes, look at number Zayin. HaChashud Lechol Dvarim HaAsurim. If we have reason to be suspicious of someone, that they don't keep kosher, Beinim Hu Chashud Be'Isur Torah, Beinim Hu Chashud Be'Isur Derabanan. Whether we're not sure if he violates biblical prohibitions, or we're not sure if he violates rabbinic prohibitions, either way, Ein Lismoch Alav Bahem. We cannot trust that person. And therefore, that would be one individual who needs a Hashgacha, because that person on his own cannot be trusted. Now, usually that's not what we're talking about. Usually you have an owner of a restaurant, not usually, most of the time, I don't know, sometimes. You have an owner of a restaurant who is a God-fearing Jew, is a wonderful person who can be trusted. I would eat in that person's house. All of a sudden, it comes to his restaurant. You wouldn't eat there. Why is that? So that's what we're going to have to get into. But here, the Shulchan Aruch makes clear, if you're dealing with an individual who himself is chashud al hadavar, is not to be trusted when it comes to the laws of kashrus because he doesn't keep kashrus himself, that individual cannot be trusted to provide kosher food for other people either. I remember a number of years ago, I don't want to give any identifying details, but there was a rabbi I'm very close with who called me up one day and he said his parents have an apartment in Israel and there is an individual who lives in the same building as they do or on the same floor, I forgot what it was, and he said that this person has seminary girls, yeshiva boys over at his house every Shabbos coming to eat meals all the time and they have a very cordial relationship. It just came to their attention that this individual who lives in their building happens to be the, who remembers the story from the butcher in Muncie? Yeah. Right? There was a butcher in Muncie who was known to be a religious man who was selling non-kosher meat to the entire community. And this was going on for a very long time. And then basically they kicked him out of town once it became known. He moved to Israel. His wife divorced him. He married another woman from Europe who didn't know anything about the story. I guess she also didn't know anything about Google. I don't know. But basically he married somebody else and they moved to Yerushalayim and he was having people over. And this rabbi called me up and said, is it my parents' responsibility to tell the seminaries and the yeshivas that they're not allowed to send anyone to this person's home because he cannot be trusted? He lost his reason for us to trust him. He was selling non-kosher chicken and meat to everybody. That person is exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says. That person cannot be trusted, and therefore that person would not be trusted in their own home either. Anyway, that was a very interesting story. Now, what exactly do you have to do to be considered a chashud? What do you have to do to lose your status of being trusted? Do we have to actually see you go into a non-kosher restaurant? Is that what needs to happen? Maybe if somebody's going into a non-kosher restaurant, they're just going in to get a drink or to use the bathroom. So what do you have to do to get on this list of you're off, you're not allowed to be trusted? The Aruch HaShulchan discusses this, and he writes the following. If you're the kind of person that is not careful in general about your obligations for mitzvos and your scrupulence for not violating Yisurim, Pshita Shuhu Chashut, says the Aruch HaShulchan, then you cannot be trusted. Meaning, even if we know nothing about your kashra standards, we don't know what you eat in your house, what you don't eat, we don't know which restaurants you go to, which places you stay away from, but we know you're just not a careful person. We know that you're not so serious about your mitzvah observance, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that would be enough reason for us to say that you cannot be trusted when it comes to the laws of kashrus. Klal gadol tzarach ladas dekol dine chashud. Ein ha-kavana dafka kishenizkabel edes bebezdin shezeh ha-ish aver averazu. When we say that somebody is a chashud and loses their trust when it comes to kashrus, it doesn't mean that we have two witnesses that come and tell us we saw him going into a non-kosher restaurant. It means somebody who we know as not to be so careful about their observance would be somebody who would not be trusted. Now, there was a very beautiful, fascinating Mechudash Tshuva in the Igros Moshe. If you look here, this is in the Igros Moshe, Yerodeh Chelek Aleph, Simin Nun Dalid. He writes a Tshuva, and at the very beginning of every Tshuva in the Igros Moshe, he says who it is that he's writing the letter to. Right? He always addresses the person, writes where the person's from, Pittsburgh, California. He writes, you know, to people all over the world. Here, when it comes to this Tshuva, you can't see it so far away, but here, there's one word. It doesn't say who it's addressed to. It says Luban. Luban is where Moshe Feinstein lived in Russia before he came to the United States. And he was writing this letter as a response to a question that he got from community members in Russia who were very stuck on the following issue. Here's the problem. Ramoshe writes, Biyosi b'maskova, when I was in Moscow, v'shnas tafresh tzadi dalid, Amanda, what year is that? Nishalti, tafresh tzadi dalid, you should know. Nishalti b'davar, sha'avos nizonim b'medina hazos. Nope. It's taking too long. No. By the way, you can Google that. It will come up. 1933. So he says, I was in Moscow in 1933. Thank you. And he says he was asked the following question. There are elderly individuals in the community in Moscow, in Russia. And the problem is they are no longer able to take care of themselves. So they have to move into the homes of their children. So that often happens. And children have a privilege of being mechabed their parents and taking care of them. Problem was, in those days, in the 1930s and beyond, there was a major rift in Jewish families. Why was there a rift? because many of the parents were Shomrei Shabbos and Shomrei Kashrus and Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, and the children were becoming communists. So a parent got older, had to move into his child's house, but he's moving into his child's house who is a communist and who doesn't believe in anything. And these parents were struggling, what do we do about being provided food by our children? We're no longer at the stage of life where we can make our own food. We have to rely on our kids. But our kids don't keep kosher. So what are we going to do? There was no option to go to an old age home for whatever reason. Either it was too expensive or they just weren't available or there was no such concept. I don't know. But the only option they had was to go to their kids. So what do we do? If I go to my child's house, I'm going to end up eating from somebody who doesn't keep kosher. So Rav Moshe was asked this question. And Rav Moshe has a tremendous chiddush, and he says, if the father or the mother, meaning if the parents, have such a deep and strong relationship with their child to the point that they know their child would never lie to them, then Rav Moshe says, we have a right to assume that they're telling us the truth and they can be trusted. That is an unbelievable chiddush. Rav Moshe says, even though the halacha is that every Jew by default can be trusted. However, as we saw the Mishnah writes in Mechoros, once you are chashud, once you are not careful about that area or many areas of life in Jewish life, you can no longer be trusted. However, says Rav Moshe, if you have such a strong bond with your parent or with your child that you know, if you tell your child, I am very sincere, I'm serious about kosher, I don't want to eat anything non-kosher, and your child promises you, I promise you, I will only cook kosher food. I have a separate set of pots here. I'm doing everything for you. You have a right to assume that they are telling you the truth. That is an amazing chiddush of Rav Moshe. Now, Rav Moshe realized that that opens the floodgates. Because once you say that, then you can have any irreligious person in the world who comes to you and says, oh, well, of course, because I love you so much and I respect you so much, of course, I'm only going to give you kosher food and you have nothing to worry about. So is that something we can rely upon? Rav Moshe walks it back a little bit. In the second volume of the Igros Moshe, he writes, if you look here, in the next line, in number 10, Aval, Alzet, Sarach, Yediyah, Brura, says Rav Moshe, you have to really be very close with that person. Kaha, Debal, Shemakeres, Ishtoshu, Ita, Tamid. Imagine, he says, you have a husband and wife. The husband is becoming a Baal Shuvah. His wife is not yet at the same level that he is. So how does he eat in his house? My wife doesn't keep kosher. So he says, I have a right to trust my wife because my wife promised me she's going to only do kosher things in the house. My wife knows not to do anything wrong because she has such a deep love and respect for me. Now, a husband can say that about his wife because he knows her so well. But if you have a stranger or if you have somebody else that you don't have that kind of relationship with, it's hard to say, says Rav Moshe, that you can really trust that individual. And therefore, Rav Moshe limits his heter to a situation where you're going to have a person who has, let's say, a parent and a child, a husband and a wife, something like that. Now, Rav Moshe asks, how can this be allowed? If the Mishnah says that we don't trust someone who is a chashud, how is this possible? How did I circumvent the law of the Mishnah? The answer says, Rav Moshe, look here in number 10, Mishum shalo nichna zeh begeder ne'emanos. The reason why I'm allowed to eat in my children's home who are communists is not because I believe my child, but rather, says Rav Moshe, when I have such a strong relationship with someone, it's ki'ilu yesh raya v'ri'iya brura. It's as if I'm watching them in the kitchen. Imagine I'm in my child's house, who doesn't keep kosher, and I'm watching them in the kitchen. I'm in somebody's home who's not frum, and I watch every ingredient. I see brand new pots coming out of the box. I see everything. Do I have any right, any reason to assume that I can't eat the food? No means I can't eat the food, or no means I can. You don't have a reason to assume, meaning, of course I'm allowed to eat the food. If I'm watching everything that's going on in the kitchen, of course I'm allowed to eat it. Says Rav Moshe, when you have that kind of relationship with a family member who you trust so much, who really has your best of interest in mind, that would never do anything to hurt you, if you have that kind of relationship, which I would say not every child and parent have that relationship. I don't think it's true. I think that many children probably would tell their parents, yeah, yeah, we're going to keep kosher for you, and then turn around and wink at their spouse and say, eh, whatever, you know, they're old anyway, we'll figure out what to do. I think that would be true. But Rav Moshe says, if you have the relationship where you know for a fact that this person would never do anything to disappoint you, where this person would never do anything to harm you in any way, then Rav Moshe says, you have a right to say, that you have a right to say that it's ki'ilu raya brura. It's as if I'm seeing with my own eyes what's going on in the kitchen, and I have no reason to assume that anything is questionable at all. That is the chiddush of Reb Moshe. That certainly cannot be applied widely or universally. That certainly does not mean that anyone who opens the restaurant, I have a right to say, well, the proprietor would never serve non-kosher food to me. You don't have a right to say that because you don't have a relationship with that person in that way. And therefore, Reb Moshe, in his heter here, which is very a tremendous chiddush, as we mentioned, Reb Moshe is very limited. It's only in that specific circumstance. Okay, so far so good? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bedvaro. Now, let's change the case. We're talking about someone, yeah?
What about the opposite, where it's your parents that you're going to, and you have to respect them, but you're also not sure about their kashrut level?
Do you think that they would respect you?
Yes, but let's see.
But they don't know.
Exactly.
So it depends for what? Depends what, you know, what you want to eat in the house, what's the level of potential problem, you know? You have to look into it. Look, just because somebody gets offended doesn't mean I'm allowed to violate all kinds of prohibitions. I maybe would be allowed to violate a rabbinic prohibition, but let's say if you're not sure if the meat is kosher, you're not allowed to eat the meat. Right? That would be a biblical prohibition. You're not allowed to do that. But it's more nuanced than that. It really depends what it is. Talk about it in the car. Okay. All right. So, for anyone who heard that online, I'll explain myself. We're all going to a wedding together. Many people are going to a wedding together. There's no yichud. There's nothing going on. Okay, fine. So what we're talking about here is if you have a religious restaurant owner who does keep kosher in his own home and who does have a good reputation, it would seem that that person has a right to be trusted. Why don't we go back to the original rule of Eidecha Nema Bisurin? The only exception that we gave here is when you have somebody who loses that trust. So then let's go back to the drawing board. Most of the people who own restaurants in our communities are probably wonderful religious people. Why do I have to have somebody overseeing their kashrus? Why do I have to have a mashgiach who's going to give an official stamp of approval on what it is that's going on? The truth is, the chachamim in every generation had their finger on the pulse. They studied the trends. They responded appropriately based on what they were seeing. So look here in the Gemara Meseches Sota Daf Memches Amud Beis. Look here in number Yud. So the Chachamim saw, Lefisha Shalach B'chol Gevu Yisrael. They sent out messengers all across the country to see what are the trends, what's going on. Says the Gemara, and they saw, She'em Afrishin Ela Truma Gedola Bovat. They saw that people are not careful about Meiser, about Truma, about other things, about different things that they're supposed to take off. Meiser Risha, Meiser Sheni. The only thing people cared about was to separate Truma Gedola. And as a result of that, they made a Takana, in reaction to the data that they collected, halokeach peiros me'amaretz, they said, if you buy fruits from somebody who is not so learned, who doesn't really know the halacha, you have to then go ahead and separate your own meiser. Why do you have to do that? Why can't I trust every Jew? Why can't I say Eidecha Nema Bisurin? Every Jew by default has a right to be trusted. The answer is because we went around the country, we surveyed to see where people are at, we came back with the data which told us that people are not being careful to separate chumas and maizes properly. Therefore, Chazal reacted to that and said, whenever you buy fruit, you have to separate on your own. So that was an individual response to an individual problem that was going on then. Similarly, we have a Gemara Maseches about Azar Lamates. Look here in Yud Aleph, where the Gemara tells us, Ein Lokhim. This is a very unusual Gemara, where the Gemara gives basically a Rashi Tevos for a bunch of things that you're not allowed to buy. Says the Gemara, Ein Lokhim Yamach Machad B'Syria. If you are visiting Syria, which is Syria, you are not, there was a major Jewish community there at the time, but he says, if you're visiting Syria, says the Gemara, you would not be allowed to buy any of these items. Yamach Machad. What is Yamach? Says the Gemara. Yayin, Morayis, Chalav, Melech, Chiltis, Gevina. You're not allowed to buy cheese. You're not allowed to buy wine. Why wouldn't you be allowed to? What's the problem? Why did Chazal say you're not allowed to buy wine or cheese when you go into a store in Syria? What? No, but it's a Jewish-owned store. The answer is because There was a specific need at the time. People were obviously not being careful in the way they produced wine or in the way they produced milk or whatever it was. These examples that are given in the Gemara, in that community in Syria, that was a problem. And therefore, the way the Rishonim explain this Gemara, Rashi and the Ravid and the Rambam and the Ran, all of the major Rishonim say, all the Gemara means to say is that was a very unique situation. Again, Chazal surveyed what was going on. They looked into the problem that was happening in that community, and they responded. The problem in that community was that people who were manufacturing wine were not being careful about what ingredients were going into the wine, and therefore they said, we can no longer trust anybody when they sell wine. You have to see exactly what's going on in order to be allowed to purchase it. But it seems that that's very limited to these situations where you have people that are doing questionable things because we survey and we see what's happening. How does that translate into our generation today? Do you go around and see that people are doing questionable things? No, we don't visit the restaurant. So what's going on? So you look here in the Rambam, and the Rambam seems to expand much greater than what the Gemara says here. The Rambam takes it a million steps further. Let's read the Rambam together. I put a little bit of the Rambam on here, number Yud Beis, but I'm going to read it inside here. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Machalos Asuros Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Chaf Hei. Am I going too fast? Everyone with us? Anyone have any questions? Okay. Says the Rambam, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Chaf Hei, Bizman Shehaisa Eretz Yisrael, Kula Li Yisrael. When the Jewish people all lived in Eretz Yisrael, as we are supposed to, at that time, Hayu Lokchim Hayayim Mikol Adam Yisrael, Vein Choshishin Lo. At that time, we were living in a utopian society. Everything was great. Every Jew was to be trusted. You walked into a store, they're selling wine, you're allowed to buy the wine. Why not? What could be the problem? However, Bechutz La'aretz, at that time, the perfect life for a Jew was in Israel. In Chutz La'aretz, things weren't the same. People weren't as educated. People weren't as careful. And therefore, if you lived in Chutz La'aretz, you weren't allowed to buy wine unless you knew that the person who was selling the wine was someone who has, he refers to as muchzak bekashrus, meaning the default position in Chutz La'aretz was you can't be trusted. Default position in Eretz Yisrael was you could be trusted. What's the difference? What's the difference? Simple. The difference is, in Israel, we assume people were more careful because they were more educated. There was a more learned society, whatever was going on. In Chutz La'aretz, people didn't have those opportunities. They didn't know. They weren't maliciously doing something wrong. They just didn't know. And therefore, the Rambam says, in his generation, in Eretz Yisrael, they were allowed to buy wine in any store because there was nothing to be concerned about. And in Chutz La'aretz, you were not allowed to. However, the Rambam says, then, tables turn. Bizman Hazeh, says the Rambam, now that it's so many generations later, and even those Jews who are living in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have, again, he's not talking in our generation, he's talking in his days. If you look at the way the Ramban describes, again, the Ramban was a little after the Rambam, but if you look at the way the Ramban describes what it was like, you know, there's a Ramban shul in Yerushalayim, because the Ramban came to Yerushalayim, but the Ramban himself writes in a letter what was going on in Yerushalayim at the time. He couldn't even get a minyan. So you talk about Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim in the days of the Rishonim, it was a very weak community. And therefore, says the Rambam, they are no longer the Jews of Israel that we remember from the days of the Tanaim and Amoraim. That's not the reality today. These are Jews who unfortunately don't have an educational system, they don't have any money, they can't go to school, whatever. They don't know the halacha as they should. And therefore, the Rambam says, now, Bizman Hazeh, Ein lo chenyayin b'chal makom ela me'adam shehuchzek b'kashrus. You are no longer allowed to buy wine from anybody unless you have looked into it and made sure that this individual who's selling it to you is a trustworthy person and is muchzak bekashrus. So here is an amazing thing, the Rambam says. We started off, the Gemara tells us, the default position of every Jew is that every Jew has a right to be trusted and believed when it comes to kashrus. Now the Rambam says that was only when we had a situation where Jews actually knew the halacha. But now, unfortunately, he says, we live at a time where people really are not so educated. They don't know. Even if they live in Eretz Yisrael, they also don't know. Certainly, if they live in Chutz La'aretz, they don't know. Therefore, says the Rambam, since we're living at this time period, you're not just allowed to walk into any store and buy wine. You can't just walk in, the Rambam says, and buy gvina and basar and dug. You can't just go in and buy fish or buy meat or buy any other item, cheeses, milks. You don't have a right to assume that everything's kosher, even if the proprietor is Jewish. Because the Rambam says, unfortunately, we don't live at that blessed time anymore where everybody knows how to do the right thing. And therefore, he says, the rules would change. So this is very, very fascinating. What it means is that the default position completely swung in the other direction. Right? It used to be the Torah says everyone's trusted. Now the Rambam says nobody's trusted. Nobody's trusted unless you can prove that this person has a right to be trusted. Is that clear? Now, the Chasam Sofer wonders, well, what changed? Chasam Sofer says, this is what we refer to as Yiridus HaDoros. Yiridus HaDoros means people used to be much more educated, and now they're not as educated. That's the way he explains it. The Aruch HaShulchan explains a little differently, similar, but a little differently. He says, when does the Torah say that every person is allowed to be trusted? When you had a very primitive society, in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you think was going on? They had 50 restaurants on Central Avenue? They didn't have that. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they had, okay, once in a while you invited your neighbor over to eat some man with you. Like, well, you know, what exactly were you doing? How big was the apparatus of the food industry? The Aruch HaShulchan says, this is never what the Torah had in mind. When the Torah said, you're allowed to trust your neighbor, you're allowed to trust your friend, you're allowed to trust your spouse or your children, that's because for the most part, where were you buying food already? Where were you getting the ingredients? Things were, now we have import and export and so many things going on. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, this is never what the Torah had in mind in the first place. And that's what the Rambam says, that nowadays the default position has basically changed and it is not at all the same. Similarly, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, when I have a restaurant and I'm trying to sell food, and this has become a business and now it's commercialized, in that situation, says the Aruch HaShulchan, there's also a concern that somebody is going to rationalize, justify the fact, oh, I'm just putting in a little bit of this, I need to make money, my children have to pay tuition for school, I have to have something to serve on the table for Shabbos, so I'll just put in some non-kosher ingredients because, and you're going to come up with all kinds of excuses. Therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, this is totally different than what the Torah originally intended when it said the halacha of Eid Echad Ne'eman bi'isurit. Okay? Everyone with me? Okay. So that's what we have so far. How do we paskin? Now we get down to the bottom line. This comes down to a machlokas, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. Look here at number Yud Gimel. Shulchan Aruch says, Hachashud lechol dvarim ha'asurim, ein lismoch alav bahem. Read those words of the Shulchan Aruch clearly. What does he say? Hachashud lechol dvarim ha'asurim means, if I have a reason to suspect that somebody doesn't keep kosher, then I cannot rely on that individual to provide me with kosher food. What's the implication of the Shulchan Aruch? What's the default position according to the Shulchan Aruch? Read it again. Hachashud le'achol dvarim ha'asurim. If somebody is suspected that they don't keep kosher, ein lismoch alav bahem. You should not rely on them. Which means, otherwise, the default position is everyone's trusted, says the Shulchan Aruch. That's what the Gemara said. That's what the Torah says. Eidechanam b'isurin. What do you mean? Every husband and wife trust each other. They come to dinner every night together. Either he made dinner, she made dinner. They don't start asking questions, show me every ingredient. Which pot did you use? Nobody does that. So, says the Shulchan Aruch, we have a right to assume that people can be trusted. Whoa, along comes the Rama, and he's like, whoa, not so fast. Says the Rama, are you aware that the Rambam said that everything changed in our generation? And the Rambam said that there's a Yiridus HaDoros. And the Rambam said that the circumstances today are completely different from what they once were. Excuse me. And therefore, says the Rambam, Yesh omrim, afilu mi she'eino chashud, rak she'ein makirin oso she'u muchzak b'kashrus, asur liknos mimenu yayin o shar dvarim, says the Rambam, slow down. We no longer trust people. We no longer believe that the default position is that everybody's doing the right thing. That was maybe in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was in the days of the Tanaim and Amoraim. Today, says the Rama, we live post the Rambam era. And the Rambam, as we just saw, said, people can't be trusted. We don't have a default position that everybody trusts each other. You know, there are different kinds of personalities. I'm curious. You don't have to be embarrassed because there's no right or wrong answer. Do you live life being a very trusting person of other people? Or are you just suspicious of everybody? What? All those who are very trusting, raise your hands. I grew up in a house, my father is the most trusting person in the world. Somebody comes to him, tells him a story, he's like, oh, wow, he starts crying, he feels terrible. I'm like, do you see this guy? Look at this guy. You know, like, do you hear him? Anyway, some people are like that, some people aren't. I guess I became more cynical as you meet more people and you're, I don't know, I guess if you're in the rabbinate and you see like a lot of things that go on and the complexities of stories and different sides of stories, you know, there's no one aware. I don't know. I'm very suspicious of people. I never used to be. I used to trust everybody. Then I realized you can't be like that all the time. You have to you have to really scrutinize. You have to look very carefully into everything and think very, very carefully before you respond, because not everybody can always be trusted. It's just not the way it goes. At the same time, we live life with some kind of trust, right? We leave for a vacation for a few weeks, and we assume that our house is going to be there when we get back. What do you mean? But our neighbors know that we're away. Not everybody has video cameras on their house, right? I don't assume that my neighbors are going to break into the house, steal everything I have, and then put a new window in. Like, it's just, we do have trust. So we do have trust. Just the question is, how far do you trust people? So everybody has a spectrum of how much they trust and how much they don't. Says the Ramah, I'm sorry, but we live in a generation where the default position is no longer that we trust everybody. Like the Rambam says. And therefore the Ramah disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. Now this is a very consequential dispute. No? No? It means according to the Shulchan Aruch, it should seem that everybody still has a right to be trusted unless proven otherwise. According to the Ramah, it's the opposite. We start from the other direction. Nobody has a right to be trusted unless it's proven otherwise. Okay, so that's a major distinction between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. So if we, Ashkenazim in the room, right? So if we, the Ashkenazim, follow the Ramah, what would someone have to do to earn our trust, right? The Rambam said we no longer trust everybody, right? Esther, you can tune out. So what happens? Sfardia. It's not relevant. All right, so what would somebody have to do to become Huchzak Bekashrus? How would I regain my status of being trusted? No? How does that work? So you look here in the Aruch HaShulchan, in number Yud Dalet, and the Aruch HaShulchan says, Ein HaKavana Sheyehe Yorei Elokim Marbim O Chasid V'Tzadik. It doesn't mean you have to be the most righteous person in the entire world in order to be trusted. That's also unrealistic. Ela, says the Aruch HaShulchan, here's the criteria. How do you know whether you can trust somebody? You go to their house for Shabbos, you want to know whether you can eat in their house? What's the answer? What do they have to do for you to know that you can trust them? Says the Ramah, again, default position is we don't trust people. How do you come to a level of trusting? He says, Kol Shem Esnaig Al Pi Das Yisrael. Somebody who lives life like a Jew. What does that mean? Meniach Talos Tefillin means they go to shul. I mean, he doesn't say that, but it means somebody who normally does regular things, davens every day, puts on talis and tefillin, mispalo gimel pa'amim b'chol yom, notil yadav la'achila, washes their hands before they eat bread, umanagas b'nei beisa b'kashras das terosenu akdosha, and as far as you know, they serve kosher in the house. Zeh nikra muchzak b'kashras, says the Aruch HaShulchan, I think that would be enough to allow the person to then be stamped as an individual who can be trusted. Okay. Along comes the Baal HaTanya. Not along comes. The Baal HaTanya was before the Aruch HaShulchan. Baal HaTanya was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He wrote a sefer called the Tanya. That's why he's called the Baal HaTanya. But he also wrote a sefer that's very important. I'm not saying more or less than the Baal HaTanya, but it's also a very important sefer called the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which is quoted on every single page of the Mishneh Berurah. Literally, hundreds of times in the Mishneh Berurah. The Baal HaTanya is quoted from his sefer Shulchan Aruch HaRav, where he basically categorized the halacha very systematically, very beautifully. So in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he writes, well, I don't know, in order for a person to then be considered trustworthy, I think we need to have a much higher standard. What is that standard, says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav? Oh, I didn't put it on here. Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes, you got to look into it. How do I look into it? He says, we have to see what kind of midos this person has. Drachav misukanim. What kind of midos do you have? That's like amazing. It's an amazing criteria. What kind of midos do you have? Why do we care what kind of midos you have? What does that have to do with how kosher you are? The answer is, somebody who has good midos also will make sure not to serve another person non-kosher food. It goes together. Similarly, he says, Yiras Hashem al panav. Can we see that you have a degree of Yiras Shamayim? You know, sometimes you see someone and you're like, there's just something very real about them. Says the Baal HaTanya, that's also necessary. Vigam, listen to this. Listen how high his standard is. Vigam shiyye yodea lilmod ulahavin ba'atzmo gemara uperish rashi. You know what you need in order to be trusted? Says the Baal HaTanya. We don't trust anybody. You know how we gain your trust? If you can open up a gemara, any page, and read it with rashi, then we know, all right, we can trust it. But short of that, nah. Wow. I don't know what community the Baal HaTanya lived in, but that's a very high standard. We have many wonderful religious people in our community who would not be able to open up a Gemara and read Rashi. That's just Not everybody, right? What? No, I think he means like, are you the kinds of people that would be able to do that? Now, I found that to be amazing. I don't think we go to the extreme. I don't think we accept that opinion. But the point being, the reason what they're struggling with here is the Rama accepts the position of the Rambam. And if he accepts the position of the Rambam, that means nobody is trusted. The default position is we don't trust anybody. Now, how do you regain your trust? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, regaining trust means you're a Jewish person, you're from. Whatever we define as being from in our community, that's good enough. Says this Bala Tanya, no, it has to be much more than that. Okay, be it as it may, they're all arguing within the opinion of the Rambam. Let's say you have somebody who is huchzak b'kashrus. Let's say you have somebody, you open up a Gemara, you say, here, read it for me. They explain it to you with Rashi, doing great. All right, now I can trust you. All of a sudden, the guy opens a restaurant. Oh, no, now we don't trust you anymore. What happened? Yeah, I just read all of Shas for you. What's the problem? So, how do you explain why we still need a hashkacha when we have plenty of people who own restaurants, who do Daf Yomi every day, who know how to read from a Gemara, who know how to have Yiras Shamayim, who are leading Torah lives, who are sending their children to Jewish day school, doing all the right things? Why would I need a hashkacha on that individual? Along comes the Shach. The Shach is the most important commentary on the Shulchan Aruch Yerideya. And the Shach brings us to a very strange, unusual psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Let's remind ourselves, what did the Shulchan Aruch just tell us? There was a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. What is the default position? Shulchan Aruch says default is we trust everybody. Rama says default is we don't trust anybody. Now, listen to the strange psak of the Shulchan Aruch himself in Hilchos Shechita. What does he say in Hilchos Shechita? In Hilchos Shechita he writes that the only one who's allowed to be trusted to slaughter an animal properly is somebody who is muhsak kine'eman, is somebody who we have tested, somebody who we know with certainty can be trusted. Along comes the Shach and he says, whoa, slow down. That same Shulchan Aruch is the one who told us a few simanim later, you're allowed to trust anybody. How come all of a sudden when it comes to the laws of Shechita, he says the default position is nobody's trusted, and the only one who can be trusted to slaughter an animal is somebody who makes sure that they were tested beforehand. Somebody who we gave a stamp of approval to. Why should Shechita be any different than Kashrus? Right? Why should the laws of Shechita be any different than eating in your home? Good question. That's the Shach's question. Along comes the Shach and he says, here's the answer. The reason why is because the laws of Shechita are so complicated. The laws of Shechita are so intricate and so confusing, so involved. You cannot assume that every person knows the laws of Shechita inside out. It's impossible. Of course, there are people who study it and who know it. But says the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to a complicated area of halacha, you need to ascertain with certainty that this person actually knows the material. And that is why the Shulchan Aruch says, when it comes to Shechita, we can't just assume everybody's trusted. We got to test you. And then we can trust you. When it comes to other areas of kashrus, we have a right to trust people. Okay? Now, that means that when you have complicated areas of kashrus, people cannot just be default trusted, even according to the Shulchan Aruch. Which is why, when we have, let's say, the kashrus apparatus of today, the proprietors and the restaurants that we have, and it's so complicated with the machinery that we have, and with the imports and the exports and fruits and vegetables coming from different countries, different places, different things, and purees, and you have ingredients and so many different things that go into running a restaurant, then that now falls under the category that the Shach writes, which is when you have something which is so complex and so confusing and so difficult, you cannot just assume that everybody's trusted. Which is why we are led to the position that we're in today. That the default position is you need to have a hashgacha in order to sell food. Why do you need to have a hashgacha in order to sell food? Look at the Sefer Beis Hillel. This is quoted in the Sefer Darkei Tshuva. Darkei Tshuva is a very important Sefer on Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, where he talks about many of the issues of kashrus. And there he writes the following, Mizeh Yireh She'tiknu b'Pinkas Hamadina. Pinkas Hamadina means every community had like a rule book. What are the expectations of this community? What kind of behavior is allowed and what's not allowed? So they said, they had a rule in the community, Shelo likach shum devar meichel o yayin. You're not allowed to buy any food or beverage. Ela im kein sheyesh biyado kasuv v'chasum Me'eza abezdin shenasa behechsher. Unless you have, as we know today, a tuda. Unless you have a sign that says this is kosher. She'af imhu muchsak bekashrus mishum lo plug. And even if you have the most God-fearing Jew, you have the Chafetz Chaim is running a store. I have no reason to assume the Chafetz Chaim is not telling me the truth. I have no reason to assume he's going to cheat me. We all know that he's an honest person. But still, Mishum Lo Plug means we want to have one uniform standard that everybody has a Teuda. Everybody's going to have a kashrus stamp of approval. And without that, we have taken upon ourselves that we will not eat your food, we will not buy from you, we will not do business with you, because we have to make sure that everybody can be trusted. Why is that the case? The answer is because, number one, the Ramah says we live at a time when nobody can be trusted anymore, and you have to build up your trust. Number two, because the Shulchan Aruch himself says, when you have a complicated apparatus that is necessary in order to have the food being prepared, that would be something that would require much more of a certification than the person himself to be trusted. Yes, question. Many people sell baked goods out of their homes. This is a very important question. How do you buy from people who sell baked goods out of their homes? I would say two things. Number one, would you eat in that person's home? Usually when I'm buying baked goods from someone who's selling in a very in that kind of way, usually it's the kind of person that's, you know, a bake sale, it's somebody, one of my neighbors, it's somebody who I know. In that situation, the same way I would eat in your house, I would also be allowed to buy your food. You're not running a massive business. When you're running a huge business, the concern is maybe you're going to bend the rules in order that you should be able to save money, put in ingredients that aren't kosher, which are going to be cheaper. Whatever, you may rationalize, you may come up with reasons. That usually applies when you have a big business going on, not when you have, you know, a little bit. But the truth is that most of those proprietors really should have a hashgacha. I know that in many cases they don't. But those proprietors really should have hashgacha. The reason why they don't is because it's not worth it. Because the amount of money you're going to have to pay to have a mashgiach come all the time and check it is not worth the money that you're making for the few platters of cookies or cakes that you're going to sell. So, yeah. Yeah? Probably. Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the most important and fundamental advantages of a mashgiach is that when you have a mashgiach overlooking the kashrus in a store, the mashgiach is not the one who's making money on the food. The proprietor, the owner of the store, is making money, and therefore he may have a reason to bend the rules a little bit. He may have a reason why he's going to put in this ingredient instead of that ingredient, use this meat instead of that meat, because he wants to make more money for himself. But part of the fundamental advantage of having a mashgiach is that the mashgiach has no financial advantage in whatever it is that happens in the store. Correct? Does that make sense? Now, what's your question? What do you mean? He does have a financial advantage. Why? The store pays him, right? So the answer is, Rav Moshe says, no, we have to set up a system where the mashgiach does not get paid by the store. The mashgiach has to be paid independently by avad hakashrus. The reason for that is because we don't want the mashgiach ever to be pressured to do something because of the store. You're on an annual salary, regardless of what happens. We're going to pay you either way. If you know that you're secure in your job, then you're able to be honest about what you see. You're able to be honest with the feedback about what you see going wrong. Correct? So Rav Moshe writes, let's look together. Rav Moshe writes in the Igros Moshe. This is on number Tes Zayin. Iker ha-mailo, sha-mashgiach noto schara mi-vad ha-kashrus v'lo me-ha-bailim. Part of the whole infrastructure of a kashrus industry is that we have mashgichim that are not paid by the provider himself, but rather they're paid by an organization. This way, you know you have an annual salary. You don't have to be worried about whatever happens in the store doesn't happen. You have a right to feel comfortable and to be honest about it. And he says this is something that we have to be very careful about. If the store is going to pay the mashgiach directly, then of course I have an advantage. Then of course I want to make sure the store is going to be happy with me. I want to make sure that I have a job. I want to make sure that I stay in a relationship with this person. And I'm just not going to be honest about all of the issues. Now, this sounds reasonable, but with the amount of kosher establishments that we have today, It would be impossible to have somebody standing in every store at every second of every day making sure that nothing's going wrong. First of all, you have kitchens that are humongous. Even if you have a mashgiach, what are you going to have, 25 mashgichim on a Pesach program? I mean, that is what we have. 25 mashgichim on a Pesach program, even that is not enough for them to be watching everything so carefully at every second of every day. So how does this work? What are we supposed to do? Have someone standing over at all times to make sure that everything's being done properly? So to this, we come to a Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah. Mishnah writes in Maseches Avodah Zarah in the fifth parak, HaMeniach Oved Kochavim Mechanus. Let's say I have a store, and I leave my non-Jewish employee in the store. Alfal Bisha Yatza. I went out to go Dava Mincha. I run outside to do something. Even though he's Yatza V'Nichnas, even though I left to Dava Mincha and now I came back, I left to mail something in the post office, now I came back, Mutter. What do you mean? How am I allowed to leave the non-Jew with the food in my store? Maybe he's going to put some non-kosher food into it. What's the heter? He doesn't want to get fired. Meaning he knows I can walk in at any minute. He knows that if I see him change anything, he's going to be in trouble. So because he knows that, a Yotze V'Nichnas means I go in, I come out, I'm back and forth. He knows that I'm a presence here. That would be good enough. Says the Rush, based on that Gemara, Al zeh somchim lahaniach kederos etzel hashvachos kishahochem lebeis hakneses. How is it that when I go to shul, says the Rush, I'm allowed to leave my housekeeper in the house with something cooking on the stove? Maybe they're going to throw something into the pot which will make my whole soup treif. The answer is, they know that I may come back any minute. And because they know that I may come back into the house any minute, therefore, we have a right to trust them. Now, let's say they know that I'm not coming back any minute. Right? Says the Rush. The only reason you have a right to trust when the housekeeper's in the house with your food that's cooking on the stove is because they know that you're a Yotzei V'Nichnas. You can come back any minute. Let's say I left the house, and then I FaceTime them from Manhattan, and I show I'm in my office, I'm not in Woodmere. Then they say, oh, I have at least 45 minutes to do anything before you come home. There's no way you can get home quicker. Correct? So in that case, it's a little bit more questionable. So you have to have a situation that we refer to as mirsas. Mirsas means I'm a little bit nervous. Lerases means like I'm concerned. So mirtas means I am worried about the fact that somebody may be Yotze V'Nichnas, that somebody may walk in at any given moment. If they walk in and catch me doing something I'm not supposed to do, that would be a problem. And that is what we rely upon in the kashrus establishments today as well. Since we assume that the mashgiach is going to go in and out of a store at any given moment and they may catch me doing something I'm not supposed to do, I don't know the schedule. Therefore, we have a right to assume that everything in the store is going to be kosher, because the person behind the counter, the person in the kitchen, is living with that concern that maybe they're going to catch me doing something wrong. Now, if you have a mashgiach, let's say, walks up and down Central Avenue, sorry for those who don't live in my neighborhood, but that's just what I'm used to. If you have a mashgiach that walks up and down Central Avenue, and every day at 2:25, on his way to Mincha, he walks into the pizza shop, that doesn't count. Why? Why? Because they know that from 10 o'clock in the morning till 2:25 in the afternoon, they can do whatever they want. He always comes every single day right before Mincha. Then he goes to daven Mincha at the 2:30 minyan, and we know that we're safe from 2:30 to 2:50 while he's davening. That doesn't work. So they're not allowed to know the schedule of the mashgiach. They cannot be people who can predict where you're going to be and when you're going to come. And therefore he says that really is the whole basis of the kashrus apparatus that we have today. There are many kashrus agencies that go beyond that and say, not only should we have a Yotze V'Nichnas, not only should we have somebody who goes in and out of restaurants unpredictably, different hours, different times of the day, but also they have put up a camera in many other kitchens that we do have the ability to look on our phones at any time during the day and watch what's going on. If a worker in the restaurant knows that there's a camera on them, they don't think that I'm watching them all day, but they know there's a possibility that I can watch them all day, and if somebody has a question, I'm going to go back and check it, so they know that they're under watch. And in such a case, that is what we rely upon today, that we have a mashgiach who comes in, who is Yotzei V'Nichnas, but also sometimes we will have a camera to make sure that people are staying in line with the understandings that we have together with them. However, Rav Moshe writes, when choosing a mashgiach, you have to make sure that you choose a mashgiach who makes sense to be a mashgiach. Says Rav Moshe, if you're going to have a mashgiach who is very timid, who is very trusting, who is very innocent, and every time they walk in, they check behind the counter and say, all right, everything okay there? Yeah, everything's fine, Rabbi, everything's perfect. All you got to do is bless the food and then we're good, right? That's not the right mashgiach. It says Rav Moshe in the Igros Moshe, you have to have a mashgiach who knows how to be firm. A mashgiach who knows how to be a little bit of a, how to think, like a twisted person a little bit. You have to have a mashgiach who knows how to be in the head of somebody who would want to do the wrong thing. Well, where would they hide something? You have to have somebody who's awake, who's acute, who understands, who knows what's going on, who also, says Rav Moshe, is a little bit amitz, who's a strong personality, that if they walk in and see something wrong, they're not going to give excuses. They're going to say, shutting down the restaurant, that's it. Until further notice, you're closed. Why? Because I just saw what you did. If you're going to have just Mr. Nice Guy who's walking around, okay, you made a mistake, but it's fine, not a big deal. Says Rav Moshe, you have to choose a mashgiach very carefully to make sure that that individual is the kind of personality that really would help to alleviate some of these concerns. So that really is the evolution of where the whole kashrus industry started from. This is where it started, that the Gemara said, Eidech Anem B'Yisurim. And it went through a lot of different cycles until it got to the place where we are today. And the Rambam basically says, which is what the Rambam quotes, the Rambam basically says that the default position has changed because people are no longer at the same level that they once were in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu or in the days of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, and therefore we have to respond accordingly. We have to make sure that we react to the reality that we see on the ground today. And that is why we have this assumption that people should generally not purchase food if it's not from a hashgacha that is reliable. Why do you have to have a reliable hashgacha? Some people say, what do you mean? There's a sticker on the window. Why can't I go in? What's the answer? The answer is exactly what Rav Moshe says. You can have a hashgacha that hangs up a sticker, but they never come visit. Or they have a mashgiach who's not serious. They have a mashgiach who's too nice, who's too much of a tzaddik, whatever it may be. That's not called a good hashgacha. That's not called a good hashgacha. A good hashgacha means that I have to make sure I'm trusting people who should be trusted because they know the industry, they understand the issues. My father always likes to say, just from his work in the OU, you can hire somebody to be the mashgiach on a major plant if they don't know anything about technology. They don't know how the machines work. They don't know where anything is stored. They don't know how to get in and out of rooms. They can be locked out of anywhere. That's not a good mashgiach. A mashgiach has to be someone who has ingenuity, somebody who understands how to work the system, somebody who knows how to deal with the people that they're interacting with, which is not always the case. And that's what it means to have a hashgacha that is good and a hashgacha that is not reliable. Hashgacha that's not reliable means they're not so serious about the people they choose to look after the product that's being provided for the customer. And that is why this has become a little bit of a complicated issue in our generation. Hashgacha is a big business. And sometimes, unfortunately, there are people who are in it for the money and don't care enough about the standard that they're providing for the community. And that is when it becomes a very, very thorny issue to figure out which hashgacha is actually reliable, which hashgacha is not. But we need to remember, the one who is responsible ultimately is us. The Torah didn't say that the rabbi has to make sure that everybody keeps kosher. The Torah said you have to make sure that you keep kosher, right? So you can't give an excuse and say, oh, I went to this restaurant, I saw something on the window, I assumed everything was fine, and like, oh, you know, how was I supposed to know? The answer is no, you should do some research, you should look into it. You're going on a Pesach program, look into it before you sign up, before you give the money, and commit yourself to that program. Make sure that what they're providing you is something that is really legitimate, something that is really going to be a strong hashgacha. So it's important for us, but to realize in the end, ultimately, it is our responsibility to make sure that we uphold the standards of kashrus that we are supposed to uphold. It is no one else's fault. Yeah.